The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
About 7 days before that man would have been sold at the courthouse steps, the farmer called me and said the lawyer wasn't doing anything. And that's when I spent time there in my office calling everybody I could think of who would handle this. And finally, I remembered that I had gone to see one just 40 miles away in America with a black farmer. So I, but working with him made me see that it's really about those who have versus those who don't. You know, and they could be black, they could be white, they could be Hispanic. And it made me realize then that I needed to work to help poor people, those who don't have access the way others have.
Little darling, oh, 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 do I do oh, little darling, oh, 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 do I do oh, well, oh, oh, are you?
Now, if this tape is allegedly from the same tape as that released by the Breitbart group the other day, I'd like to ask a simple question. Why is this tape so clear from the NAACP 20th Annual Freedom Fund banquet, while the other tape is so difficult to understand? If it's the same tape, why are her comments, which cause so much consternation in America, so hard to understand, the ones that got her fired, while this is so crystal clear, where she's shown to be in a better light? Let's put it to you that way. In this, she's shown to be a fair-minded, nice person. She helps the farmer, Roger Spooner, and she says color doesn't matter, and it's clear as a bell she's a nice lady. Yet the statements that we heard the other day, the audio quality was pretty bad. I mean, listen to clip six now. I want you to hear this. Six.
I took him to a white lawyer. I figured if I take him to one of them, that his own kind would take care of him.
Now, I'm asking you a question. The audio quality is horrible on these tapes, yet they're excellent on the ones that present her in a better light. I believe that there's much more to this story than meets the eye. And my suspicions indicate to me that the government itself is behind this. I will repeat what I said at the beginning of the show, and this is unique to the Savage Nation. My analysis is my own, and that's why you tune in. It's for my take on things. I believe that we have every reason to suspect that the Dirty Tricks Division of the Obama administration leaked these edited tapes, these original series of edited tapes, to the Breitbart group, knowing that as a idealistic man who brought down Acorn with tapes, he'd jump at them. And then they fire her. Then the NAACP gets mad at her. The next day they release other tapes which show her to be something other than that. And suddenly the administration says, oh, we're really fair, we're sorry. They rehire her. The NAACP apologizes. And it makes the Tea Parties and the individual who released these tapes look like the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, which is exactly what the Dirty Tricks Division of the Obama administration would want. In other words, my theory, and it's only a theory, is worthy of discussion. Because any time a thing like this happens, you have to ask yourself, how did it happen? Especially when I've just played for you two sets of tapes, supposedly from the same tape. One was the woman speaking clearly, where she's seen as fair-minded, and then the earlier tapes, where she seemed to be a bigot. How is that possible, if it's the same exact speech before the NAACP March 27th banquet? How is it possible, right? I'd like to know how it's possible. So I suspect that there's much more to the story than meets the eye. So she's now got the job back. White House apologized for pushing a black woman to quit. That's all. That's what is next? Obama this, Obama that. He's on vacation again. Where is he now? Last week he sent his dog on a private jet somewhere. Here's an interesting poll. Any Republican would beat Obama in 12. Whites and independents deserting Obama. I said that last week. I told you that the white working class white is who put him in power is running away from the man because he attacked them. They're running away. They were snookered. They didn't want Bush too, so they tried anything. But and it was because of the war. I keep saying it's because of the war. I told you that over and over again. It's the white working class family whose sons go into the military. They hoped that the war would be ended by the anti-war candidate Obama because they feared for their son's life. No one is showing you this in the polls because they don't have my analysis, my analytical skills. And so now Obama comes along and he adds 40,000 troops to Afghanistan and there's no sign of an end to the war. And so the whites are saying he's no different. We'd rather have someone who's competent because they're both going to keep the war going. Job approval rating in the toilet. Lowest point ever. Independent voters turn on president since honeymoon. Well, it's long overdue. You know, it's very long overdue. So something's bigger than there's something big here. Much bigger, and I still think it's got the Obama administration's dirty tricks division all over it. So that's what is going on right now. Every day another race case. The administration that was supposed to be it's the most racially divisive president in history. You don't know whether they're doing this on purpose. I don't actually think they are. What I think is that Obama has used race his entire life to get where he is. I say that and I will stand by those words. I believe his race was used to get him into college, into Harvard, to this, to that. And every step of the way, people catered to this man. Because I've been around this situation. I know how it works. I've seen white liberals at work. It's kind of nauseating to watch them operate. It's almost frightening to see the kowtowing to anybody but people of European descent. It's frightening to see it. It's a form of racism in itself, by the way, incidentally. The kowtowing by the white liberal towards people of color, or foreigners, if you want to put it that way, because that's another category altogether, they seem to be in love with the foreign-born. They can't get enough of them. Is a form of superiority based upon a false sense of self, that they're so good, you know, noblesse oblige, that they're kind of deferring to the little people, giving the little people a break, is what it is. There were ladders across the races before Obama came along. Tenuously, but albeit true, they were there. I mean, I've never seen such racial disharmony in this country since the 1960s. And it's not because Obama himself is doing it. It's just because he can't help himself. I don't even think he's conscious of the fact that he's at war with himself. It's going to take a psychologist to understand what's going on here. But I believe that Obama and race is heating up. It's not just what happened with the woman in the Agriculture Department when she was forced to resign and then she was rehired. But let's go back. How about last July when Obama was subjected to criticism for saying the police had acted stupidly when they arrested Harvard University troublemaker and all-around loser Henry Louis Gates, who was black, on charges he was breaking into his own home? How about when the Justice Department dismissed voter intimidation charges against the new Black Panther Party, which has prompted rational criticism from those who say that the black president was willing to prosecute fellow black, was not willing to prosecute fellow blacks for civil rights violations? Okay? So race in America has always been tenuous. It got better over the years, but it's getting worse right now. So Obama is fair to both sides? I don't know if that's true. You read his own autobiography. He says that he never really had racial problems until he went to Harvard, I think, at which time he started to identify with the Black Panthers and the Marxists and the lesbian feminists and the others who had a grudge, basically, and an axe to grind. And he said that's when he came in touch with that side of himself. So he didn't exactly come to terms in some ways with his uniqueness. He came to terms by identifying with a radical part of one part of himself. And I think we're seeing that, frankly. Why would he appoint one czar after another who was an avowed Marxist? Why would he continue to bypass the checks and balances of Congress and force bills down the throats of the American people if the man truly believed in democracy? I'll be right back.
Savage. dip, 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 dip. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle.
Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la,
puddle.
Sha-la-la-la,
sha-la-la-la, puddle. Dip, 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 get a job.
Sha-la-la-la,
sha-la-la-la.
You made me put it in about this time to get me out of my bed and find a job.
You know, in Cuba, Castro gave a speech where he said, we're going broke. We can't have all of these jobs. We can't give these state jobs anymore. They talk about a state project where one worker is painting a wall while two others watch him paint the wall. On the payroll, by the way. A fourth worker sleeps in a wheelbarrow. And two more workers on the painting of the wall smoke and chat on the curb. It sounds like Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco. It sounds like Obama's dream, a government job. Six people with one doing the job and five watching. So listen what Castro said. He said, we've got to lay off workers. There's too many. Now facing a severe budget deficit, the communist government of Cuba has hinted at restructuring or trimming its bloated workforce. So in April, even Castro says, listen to this, without people feeling the need to work to make a living, sheltered by state regulations that are excessively paternalistic and irrational, we will never stimulate a love for work. Now that's in a communist nation. That's in a hardcore Stalinist nation called Cuba. And yet this gratitude of the work ethic is never heard from Obama. Not one word ever came out of Obama's mouth glorifying the beauty of work. Instead, he glorifies state regulations, the paternalism of the Obama administration, and millions of state and federal jobs that are worthless, garbage. And so as Cuba gives up some of the public sector jobs, Obama creates them. Everything that has failed in the communist world, this college teacher is introducing to America. Did you hear this? Even Cuba is introducing small free market reforms at the same time Obama and Pelosi are eliminating the free market with increased red tape and crushing bureaucracy. So you say, well, we know that. You don't know that. No, you don't that. Many of you are too stupid to know anything. You don't know what the hell I'm talking about, most of you, because you went to college. You're so stupid, you don't know anything. You went to college, you came out stupider than when you went in. You don't even know what I'm talking about, most of you people 20 years old. And you think you should have a job? You're not worthy of a job, most of you. You're not worthy of anything. You can't read, you can't write, and you can't add without a computer. All you can do is text. And you know how to buy pointy shoes and seek an orgasm. That's what you got from 5 years in college. You know how to seek an orgasm and buy pointy shoes. Well, you look how we've gone from ravioli to bologna in one generation. It's disgusting. It really is. Let's play some music. Una mezzumare, mezzumare. Maritare. Figlia mia. Ascoltare, mare. Oh. Sette figlio. Sette
pesciaiole, slena, sette pesce, manatena.
Manatena.
Se ci ingappa la fantasia dei pescioli a picchiozza mia, la la riola,
la 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 la. Everybody sing. Hey, gumba, way gumba. From ravioli to bologna in one generation. Here's the second stanza.
C'è una luna, luna mezza mare.
Marinare.
Figlia mia. Dare, mamma mia, pensa
tu.
Se te peglia lo polizia, isvai, isvena, sembra scuppetta manatena.
I love this language. It's a beautiful language. Just
se
a beautiful language. Se c'è
la fantasia di scuppettia, vecchiuzza
mia. How you can order shrimp scampi after the Gulf? The Gulf spill. It's going to be off the menus. No more shrimp of this, shrimp of that. The big part of the menu. I turn it off. Think all of the Italian menus are going to have to be changed in America. No more shrimp scampi, no more shrimp this. The shrimp is gone. That's why I was playing Lazy Mary, You Better Get Up. She answered back, I am not able. Lazy Mary, you better get up. We need the sheets for the table. Lazy Mary, do you smoke in bed? There's only one man you should marry. My advice to you would be is to pay attention to me. You better marry a fireman. He'll come and go and go and come. Play it again. I think the people want to hear music instead of Obama and Pelosi. I mean, what are you going to do? You don't want to hear it. I turn it off. They don't want to hear it. They heard it already. I already played this for all it's worth. Well, you want to hear it or not? You want to hear it. All right, one more time. Some do and some don't. One more shot. He says marinara. It should be maritara. What's he singing about? Shrimp, or is he singing about a sheet on a bed here? What's he singing about?
Second stanza.
Second stanza. Apollon Casadice. Turn it off already. I remember when I was a little kid, some of the Italian guys in my father's neighborhood, they knew I used to like cowboy outfits, and I used to always have the two cap guns. They'd come up to me, and the Italian guys would look with a big smile. They love children. All these guys love children as opposed to today where they molest children. You know, you could trust the men to take care of a child. If anyone looked at them wrong, they'd cut their throat. They'd come up to me, and they'd say, hey, a little hop along, Casadice. I didn't know what they were talking about. It was so funny. What fun we had. But it's a different world. You knew you were protected in the neighborhood. It didn't matter what race or religion, the men were all the same. They were protective of children. Look what we have today. Take a look. Play that sound one more time.
C'è una luna a mezzumare, mamma mia dare. Figlia mia, cosa dare, mamma mia, pensacci tu.
But anyway, here we are. I mean, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. You get that one? If you can walk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. I read it to my children when they were young. I learned it when I was young, and believe me, Rudyard Kipling had it exactly right. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Hey!
Savage. Good night, sweetheart. It's time to go.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I hate to leave you, but I really must say, oh, good night, sweetheart, good night.
We don't know how far this Obama will take this country and how much he can get away with, but I believe he's being run by the most intelligent people in the world. If they could take a shill like he, who had no experience to speak of, who came from an unknown background, who was supported with monies that we don't know where most of the money came from, and pulled this off without much media interest, virtually anything is possible. I have long feared that we'd wake up one day and that we'd see communist Chinese in the White House with the president at the time saying, We have nothing to worry about. We're just changing the structure of our government slightly. Nothing will change. Do not worry. In fact, it's good for the economy. We're going to have a few individuals from the People's Republic of China and from Russia helping us guide this country back to its healthy state. There will be a few changes and nothing more than a few changes. Nothing to worry about. In fact, our debt is going to be absorbed by our friends in China. And we're going to be helped by our friends in Russia with great transfers of oil. And the amount of money we're going to save by eliminating the U.S. Navy, reducing it only to a signal fleet rather than a war fleet, is going to help balance the budget. And right now, I'd like to introduce to you Mr. X from Russia and Mrs. Y from China, who will now be part of our new troika in the White House. There will be a few changes in America, ladies and gentlemen. Some of the most hateful individuals in the media will no longer be heard. In fact, they're going to be re-educated so that they're no longer hurting world affairs in that they've helped slow the reset of our relations with these two friendly giants. And so, therefore, for the health and safety of America, we are no longer permitting any broadcast media except ABC, NBC, and CBS. All cable channels will now be running weight loss shows 24/7. And the individuals behind Fox News will now be going to the re-education camp, along with the talk show hosts who have done so much damage to this nation. The reliable sources of news will be Pravda, ABC, CBS, NBC, and the state-run television out of China, because these are reliable sources. In addition to these changes, there will be some changes in our educational system. References to the wars will be rewritten. We will understand the great sacrifices that were made both by China and Russia in World War II, without whose effort we would have seen a fascist dictatorship take over the world. In addition to this, there'll be some changes in our schools, et cetera. You can fill in the blank. I can write a whole book on it, and I've done. I don't want to give the whole book away because it's not available until it comes out in October 12th, I believe. But this is serious stuff. I don't know how much longer we can take this erosion of our fundamental freedoms, which anybody with a brain, anyone with any historical knowledge, can see Obama is conducting. He is eroding our very freedoms. He is functioning as though he is a dictator. He is saying go to hell if someone tries to challenge him. He believes he has absolute authority. He has no respect whatsoever for the U.S. Constitution or for the checks and balances that were instituted by men 1,000 times greater than he. Look, I could say Obama's the most inept president in history and could say it's the most corrupt administration in history, and you'd agree with me. Therefore, we're going to play rock and roll on Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation.
Yeah. Oh, little girl of mine, gee, you sure look fine. Yes, you appeal to me.
I want you to cook a paella, which I do every few months. I do the best in the world. Really, the best. The absolute best paella. I've never been in a restaurant that did better since my early days in Spain. But the problem was I asked for the whole chicken. They gave me the whole chicken and nothing but the chicken. So help me, God. The only thing they didn't give me were the feet. You know, they keep the feet back. They sell them to the Chinese or the soup manufacturers. So you get giblets, you get a giblet, blah, blah, blah. So we made an instant chicken stock to go along with the rice when you're cooking it in the big pot. I don't buy the chicken stock in a thing. So-called natural chicken stock, I could puke from it. I hate it. I make my own. Anyway, the long and short of it, so the giblets came out. We took it out of the water, the boiled water. And normally I throw it in the garbage. For some reason, I turn around, it was given to the dogs. So I hope she's not listening, because I'll pay for this one tonight. I knew what would happen. And sure enough, a slip job on the stove. Don't even ask me. I don't want to go into it. It's just horrible. Every day is it. But what are you going to do? I don't blame the dog. You'd also do the same thing if you were given a chicken heart, a chicken liver ground up mixed in with your gruel, right? If you were eating that with your oatmeal, what would you do? Well, I see cooking shows. I can't believe it. Everything they don't even know what they're cooking half the ingredients, that some of them are deadly. Now, let alone they taste horrible. But all I got to do is drizzle olive oil on it and sprinkle and smash a raspberry on it. And they're ready, the head chef of the universe. I don't. My mother never would have made food like that. I can't eat it. The minute they put a sweetening agent on food, I don't go to that restaurant. I never go back. No, sir. I don't eat that kind of food. If I want a dish, why would I want raspberries or fruit on top of a piece of meat? Who the hell invented that kind of cooking? Where did this come from? It's like a deranged mind. It's like fusion cooking. I've always called it Confucian cooking, my friends, as opposed to Confucian cooking. I like Confucian cooking, but it's hard to find. But the Confucian cooking prevails in New York City in particular. Confucian is out and Confucian is in. Everything's fusion. You know what fusion means? The guy don't know what the hell he's doing. He squeezed a raspberry and sprinkled olive oil, and he called it Confucian cooking. I'm mixing Asian and Italian. I'm going to come up with a perfectly nauseating mixture that nobody could ever eat. It's like, ugh, but oh, I loved it. Why? Because he's famous. Nah, I don't like that kind of food myself, aren't they? Let's hear some more rock and roll.
Heart and soul, I fell in love with you. Heart and soul, the way of gold.
I hate port, by the way. Do you drink port? That's such a like feminine thing to drink. I mean, even in a bad play, you wouldn't even drink port anymore. Port's a disgusting drink, and yet it brings a big dollar, old port. I know I'm going to get a guy who's going to call and says he loves it. I don't know what I'm talking about. All right, so I'm a simpler guy, truthfully. I can't stand port. It originated from shipping wine that went bad in ships. It became port wine. Now it's developed already into something very expensive because it's expensive, it's good. There's a lot of things that are expensive that are no good, incidentally. And a lot of things that are inexpensive that are quite good. Let's talk about that for a minute. No, I can say, I don't feel a grip today on the show. I don't know. Maybe it's me. All right. I'll be right back.
Savage.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had
from ravioli to bologna in one generation. It's unbelievable to me how the world has changed from the time I was a kid. You know, in my day, we knew that there were corrupt politicians. How many of them? Who knows? But there was a firewall between corruption and the word I'm going to use is a very powerful word. There was a firewall between corruption and treason. There is no firewall anymore. It ended during the Clinton administration when the head of the DNC sold rocket technology to China and got away with it. And once they saw that he could get away with that, everything broke. The dams broke. There was no longer any loyalty to the United States of America because the normal fear that they had that they'd be caught by the FBI and sent to Fort Leavenworth evaporated. They realized they could sell anything to anyone, and even if they got caught, they could get a Feinberg to get them out of it. You want me to mince my words? You got the wrong customer here. You want me to start talking real nice, and you want me to start talking like you do at the school meetings? You got the wrong show for that. We're too late for that in America. Look how far we have fallen. I am telling you that millions of very intelligent, knowledgeable people understand that we have the equivalent of a criminal gang running the United States of America. They can't believe it's going on right in front of their eyes. And they don't understand how they can get away with it day in and day out. They say, well, where's the FBI? The answer is, who's the FBI report? Do you think the FBI is now an independent agency? How long has it been since the FBI was really an independent agency? It didn't happen under Obama. How long has it been since any of those agencies were really functioning as independent agencies instead of an addendum to the executive office? We have a dictatorship of the executive office in America today. It did not start under Obama, but it's liable to end under Obama. There is too much power in the hands of one man, as I said yesterday. How could you have a president? It's the system now. Now I'm talking in generic terms about the system. How do we have a winner-take-all system, number one? But number two, how do you afford so much power in the hands of one individual? No man on earth is capable of being, A, the smartest businessman in the world. So let's start with that. Chief executive. To me, a president should be somebody who either built the business on his or her own, without robbing it from anyone, and that would exclude lawyers, number one, built a business, nurtured it, built it, cultivated it, made a fortune honestly. Then you would say, well, this person has business experience. That's what a CEO should be, and that's what we need as a chief executive. The next step is to say, well, how could this executive know how to run a military unless he's been in the military and achieved some great awards as a military man? He can't. So the concept that a president should have the power to be the smartest businessman on earth and the bravest soldier that ever lived, how is that possible? We're asking too much of one man. Why do you assume that Obama knows so much about everything? That he can run a military and he can run businesses, he can run the education department, he knows everything. Why do you assume that one man can know this all? How do you assume that? And therefore, since you must assume he cannot do it all, you must assume logically that he's failing in some areas because he selected people who are incapable of doing it as well. I got to tell you this as a side note. I bought a piece of fish the other day in my fishmonger store. I like that word, fishmonger. And I couldn't believe it. He pulled out a tuna that came in from Fiji that morning. It was like, it was never frozen. It was on ice. It was the most delicious piece of fish I've ever eaten in my life. I said to him, how much does that piece of fish cost you? You know that they pay, I mean, and they're only paying $8, $10 a pound for this stuff wholesale, which is amazing to me. I bought a piece of this fish. It cost me about $7, which I cooked for dinner. about 6 minutes on one side, 4 minutes on the other, virtually no oil, no seasonings. I cook my fish all the way through because if I want sushi, I mean, you're risking worms. You know that. Fish are like any other animal. Inherently, fish have worms in their flesh. You don't want to eat much sushi. I've told you that before. And this whole concept of uncooked fish is unto itself a public health hazard. But, you know, go tell people that they're eating something that should be cooked. They'll think you're crazy because where this started, I don't know what these chefs today that come out of cooking school, these guys with pimples, they go to a cooking school for 3 months and they're all celebrity chefs working for a minimum wage. They don't know they're behind from their elbow. My mother knew more about cooking on a four-burner electric stove in Queens than these guys could learn in 30 years. What? Because you put more butter and sugar and salt on it, it's suddenly gourmet. Or you drizzle oil on it, or you sprinkle raspberries. It can make you puke. Everything they put a fruit on. You ever hear this? Fruit-coated steak. And then they put butter on top of it and salt it to death. It's a gourmet meal. Anyway, the point of the story is don't eat uncooked fish. When you order, when they usually say to you, what do they call it? How do they rephrase this today? Where they serve the fish uncooked in the middle? I don't know what they call it. I forget what they have a name for, a euphemism for it. I stopped them each. I had it last night in a place. In fact, I went back to a place called Outback. I hadn't been in Outback in years. I have very pedestrian tastes in food, I will admit it. I don't like in a fine restaurant. I have nothing against it. I just can't take it. I feel like I'm getting a haircut. I don't like formality, really. I don't. I'm a simple guy in that regard. I do love good food, and I know the difference between good food and bad food. And I don't like the fuss around food. It makes me uncomfortable. I want to eat and be left alone. So I go back to Outback. Now, there's one flaw in Outback. I went there because I didn't want to wait online. I didn't want to talk to anybody. The number one problem in Outback, the chain, is not the food. It's the lamps over the table. Whoever the lighting designer was should be arrested. Every time I go to sit there, that lamp hangs over the table. The light hits you right in the eye, and I feel like I'm in Dragnet being grilled for a crime I didn't commit. That's number one. So I have to start with putting either I turn the light bulb out like in The Godfather 2, The Godfather where he turns out the bulb. That's number one. You got to get like a wet handkerchief. Then you can't see your food, so you can't do that. And most people think you're crazy if you turn a light out. And or you hang a napkin over it, which you risk setting the napkin on fire. Or three, you hang something over the thing. All right, so I ordered a piece of fish, but I said to the young lady, they usually reform masseuses. I found a high relationship between they're tattooed. They usually have nose rings and earrings, but they're reformed like Al Gore masseuses, and they take these jobs. I'm nothing against them. By the way, I'm a sexual libertarian. I want to be very clear about that. I've said that in my Playboy interview. I've tried to tell you that on the show for years. I've been miscast. What people actually do for their sexual gratification is not my business, number one, nor do I give a damn what they do. Sexuality is very complex. People are tense. Whatever they do is their business, as long as they leave children alone. I'm not a moralist in that regard, okay? All right, so as I say, the girls are generally reformed masseuses. And they don't really understand food. They usually come from a very poor background where they grew up on like mayonnaise sandwiches and white bread, you know, mixed in with the mother. Whatever the mother fell out of the crack pipe, they grabbed off the floor and sold on the street to buy food. So they don't really know food. So they say, well, blackened. Or there's another word they use. I can't even remember. Where they coat the outside and it's crisp. I say, fine, just make sure. Seared. I'm sorry. Seared mahi. Which means it's burnt when they burn the fish. Unto itself, I don't mind seared, but I want them to cook it all the way through. So I said, make sure it's cooked all the way through. And by the way, I add a baked potato, and I said, no butter. All right, the bread, number one, you could throw in the garbage. My seagulls wouldn't eat it off the deck of my house. It's so sugary. You can't eat that bread. Thank God the beer in a bottle you can't get. You know, I don't drink Australian beer myself. It's a migraine. I drink only certain beers. I'm not going to mention them because I don't promote them. I like a certain type of beer. The German beer is brewed by the certain decree in 1631. They're the best beers in the world. So I had a couple of beers, and I got the fish. The potato comes laden with sour cream and bacon on it. I said to you, no butter. She says to me, but you didn't say no sour cream. I said, honey, I'm on a low-fat diet. Do you understand sour cream and bacon are on that list? She didn't know what I was talking about. I didn't get angry. It's like there's certain things you can't get mad about. You know what I'm saying? I said, all right, just bring me. You know, it's a torture for me to eat out. I'm a quirky person. Admittedly, I'm very picky. Even though I can be very, very blue-collar simple, within the blue-collar simple, the food has to be on a very high level. You understand? But I would still recommend that you go to Outback. It's a great place. What would you like to talk about? Because I said it has to be your show. I'm enjoying the music so far. What music can I play right now? You have another Italian favorite? Not Dean Martin. It's enough. It's old-fashioned. They don't like that. Any Italian movie? Perry Como? He's too old. Bail me out here, Phil. I mean, do something with a little music. Try it, at least. I'm groping here.
Volare.
And Volare. Okay.
Oh, oh.
Memories, memories, memories. I love Gantare. I love that part of the... How you speak Italian like that. What dialect is that? Neapolitan? Napolitano? Janet Napolitano? She's a Napolitano. She's a Napolitan. She's a Napolitana, excuse me. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to insult her. She's a Napolitana, not a Napolitan. Janet Napolitano's a Napolitana. There's nothing wrong with that. Gantare, isn't that Neapolitan? Neapolitano. The organ I could do without reminds me of ice skating. Ice skating music always depresses me. Look how things trigger things in your head. I don't like the organ. I know it's a very tough instrument to play. Phantom of the Opera and all of that. The most difficult of all the keyboards is an organ. But it reminds me of ice skating in Flushing Meadow Park at night with my uncle when I hated school. So it's always been. It's like remembrances of things past. When I hear an organ, I get depressed. Funerals. I'm sorry. Funerals, too. Whenever you're an organ, it's a funeral. Why? It's just an associational thing. I'm trying to change the subject. I can't take it anymore.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
My lawyers are going to kill me because they say that the best thing in my best interest is not to make any comment. I don't know how to say no comment. It's a very difficult thing for me to turn away reporters. I have been saying, would you please wait until the Ethics Committee completes its investigation? It's been awkward for me, and it's been awkward for you. There's very little that I can say. Someone said, why have a press conference if you're not going to answer any questions? I cannot make any comment that would make any sense at all. Would you please wait until the investigation is over? Know that saying no comment is very, very difficult for me. That's subjective stuff. I'm here to talk some facts. I'd rather write a novel, you know, rather than just talk about this stuff.
Each time we have a quarrel, it almost breaks my heart. 'Cause I'm so afraid that we will have to part. Let's go.
I love Danny and the Juniors. I don't know about you. It's when America was great, when the chrome was thick and the women were women. When the chrome was thick and the women were women. There's no chrome on the cars anymore. Turn it on. I got a 65 Caddy with a pair of bumpers on her. This is the one after the Dagmar Caddy. It's you know, the 59 was the Dagmar years. But then the chrome, you know where the chrome came from? You're talking about minerals. The chrome came out of New Caledonia, a lot of it, an island in the South Pacific. The French had the exclusive mining rights to the chrome. I think after they mined it to extinction, we went to the Toyota concept of a car, which is virtually no bumpers or rubber bumper. I don't like bumpers that aren't chrome, by the way, because every nick you have to go to a body shop. When did they come up with that? You talk about built-in obsolescence. When they make the bumper the same as the car, you talk about, okay, parking lot neurosis. I've defined it on the show years ago. You know, ding neurosis? I am a man who suffers various and sundry little quirks, and I will admit it. One of my quirks is ding neurosis. If I go anywhere, I have to park farther away than anyone would believe. No one wants to drive with me. He's like, Dad, please, we'll take our own car. I'll park on the other side of the lot in the dark. I'll walk in an unlit parking lot to put the car where no one can ding me, because the whole meal I'm sitting there, all I'm thinking about is someone opened the damn door and I know they wang the car. Then I know if I even put it there, someone's going to pull right. You ever do that? You pull into a lot that's empty. You go to the old end, you know, and then you come back. The whole lot's still empty, but some schmuck pulled right next to you. Right next to you. You had to pull where you were down at the end near the tree and the mud and the water at the end of the lot where it's low, and he dinged your door. And there's nothing to do with that. But what are you going to do? Like, flatten four tires or key them? You're not that kind of person. You're not a liberal. You didn't go to Bolt Law School. So let's go to the calls now around America. Thanks for listening. Houston, AJ, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Big Savage, glad you're back, baby. Hey, as a black man, Savage, I am sick and tired.
Just one man AJ, I'm just one man screaming in the wilderness. No one listens to me.
My dad, man. You like my dad, brother. I love you, bro. Hey, but Savage, I'm letting you know right now, as a black man, I am furious of what this man has done to this country in a year and a half. It took us this long to get to this point, and he comes in there, instead of doing the right thing by the country, he bashed the country, take the country down. And black folks ought to be ashamed of going along with this guy. He got us divided. You know what they call me, Savage? Uncle
what?
Tom, everything else, that I'm not going along.
In other words, you got to be for him because of the race thing. I know how that works. It's very strong. I know how it works. I know exactly how this works. Every ethnic group has the same problem. It's the same amongst Chinese, Jews, Hispanics, you name it. Any ethnic group that goes against anyone within their own ethnicity, no matter how bad they are, they're called every name under the sun.
The sun. And wait a minute. And here Hillary goes and stabs us in the back. You know what? You're right. Enemy within. We are in trouble. And I'm the American people. It ain't going to matter what.
AJ, let me ask you a question. You sound like your horse, like you have a sore throat. What's with you today?
Savage, I've been debating people. I'm out here in the streets. This is about all right. I'm just one little person. And I'm out here debating people. I'm in the stores. I'm just carving up conversations with them. And I'm letting them know that this regime is taking over this country. And you better wake up. This is different. This don't have anything.
See, this is different. This is worse than Boss Tweed. This one could be fatal. And as I said, you don't have to look any further than the Gulf spill. Why would they shut down the barges? Tell me that one. Yeah, ask them why they would stop them for life preservers.
Get these people off of welfare and get them all down in these towns and get them out there. We here in Texas, and I'm telling you, Perry will get these people working down here, and we're doing fine in Texas, Savage. But you know, this is blatantly done on purpose. This man,
well,
on the
as I said, it's either a combination from column A of incompetence or from column B corruption. But you take one from column A and one from column B, and what you wind up with is column O. What else did I want to say to you now that we're talking here on the Savage Nation? I'm watching the Pacific on TV, even though I said I wouldn't watch it. I did watch it later on after I got over hating the guy who said that America's a racist nation. One of the producers was Spielberg's friend there. What's his name? Tom Shame Hanks. Tom the Shame Hanks. Shot himself in the foot just before the series came out. He said, well, fundamentally, World War II was a racist war. America's a racist nation. Shame on you, Tom Hanks. You always were a good actor, but I knew underneath it all there was nothing but an empty skirt. Just put your kilt on and the wig in the mirror and leave us all alone with your politics, Tommy boy. You know, you're just a marionette like Sean Penn. You're a putz when you open your mouth and you don't have a good director and a good script. What a moron. Here's a country that saved us from racism, and he calls us a racist nation. So I'm watching the Pacific, and I see what, you know, just a dramatization of what these boys suffered through in the Pacific theater. They lived in mud. They slept in the mud. They had to fight the most fanatical enemy the world had ever seen. The Japanese who would never give up, where they're killing them and killing them and killing. And one of them says to the other, why don't they just give up? And of course, it's not in their code, the Bushido code. You know, they'd rather die than be dishonored by surrendering. And the things they lived through, and I ask myself, they lived so that Elena Kagan could be taken from Harvard and put on the Supreme Court? This is the Savage Nation. We're open for business.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
BP has contained the oil leak. That is good news, finally. The bad news is that no one has figured out how to contain Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson, no one knows how to contain. So this is why I want to ask all of you to just please turn off your cell phones, because we're expecting a call from him. So just want to make sure of that.
Let's first play the music that is dedicated to the memory of Mel Gibson and Oksana when they first met. Let's begin with this song.
Earth angel, will you be mine?
All right, so he's in love. 90 days, it lasts 90 days, according to Professor Savage. The passion, the love, the girl is the earth angel. The world is going to open up for you like Moses in the Red Sea. You found nirvana. You're going to have one happy day after another. It's been studied worldwide since Roman times, and it's been found to last between 89 and 92 days. Then on the 93rd day, here is what you hear in clip 7. 93rd
Mel,
day.
You're losing your mind. You need medication.
You need a kick up the ass for being a gold digging with a gun. And I want my child, and no one will believe you. So you.
All right. Then on day 120, we get clip 8. Here's what happens to Earth Angel on clip 8.
And I'm not giving you my house, and you can rot unless you crawl back, suck, and say you're sorry in that order. Do you understand me? You offend my maleness, my masculinity, my being, my soul. And you call me a sinner. You're a moving violation, showing off your fake like they're some special deal.
Are you
How
crazy?
How much do they cost, those fakers?
Are you crazy?
You complain about mastitis. They're fake, baby. Come on, you got little bladders in there. You think I'm an idiot?
It's sad, but that's what happens after about 4 months. So we go from Earth Angel to the following song in every relationship. Now we come to the next stage, which is the Rammstein inside the male. This is what the male, this is what the male feels after 140 days of Earth Angel.
Du hast mich. Du hast mich.
All right, after approximately 160 days, Earth Angel is heard in clip 9.
Have you said everything?
I said nothing! You need to say a lot to assuage my insanity because you made me this way.
I didn't make you this way.
You did so.
You were born this way. And you yell and scream and threaten everybody around you. Everybody's fitting around you because they'll scare the out of you. But you paying
a bunch of using like you. You're like every other.
And then, of course, sadly, in every relationship, it doesn't matter whether it's in Serbia or in Hollywood, after approximately 180 days, the only music that will work will be Pantera. with Broken. Let's hear Pantera, and you'll know where we're coming from here on the Savage Nation.
I wonder if we'll survive.
So in other words, half the audience already turned the show off. They don't know what I'm talking about. They have no idea what I was doing. It's actually very good radio that I just did. For those who understand, about 1% of the audience got it.
All the leaves are brown.
Diaper Dopa babies are ruling this country. What they don't know is that marijuana, although it may be so-called natural, marijuana is far more dangerous than tobacco smoke. Do you know that marijuana, mainstream marijuana, has ammonia levels that are up to 20-fold greater than that found in tobacco? Hydrogen cyanide, nitrogen oxide, and some aromatic amines, which are all carcinogenic, were found in marijuana smoke at concentrations 3 to 5 times those found in tobacco smoke. But you can't tell that to potheads. Potheads are brainwashed. They don't know that they have mercury, for example, and much of the marijuana that is grown today is grown on volcanic soil. I talked about this for years. And you know the story of the Mad Hatter. I told you about the Mad Hatter. The Mad Hatter was a fable. But what does the Mad Hatter actually mean? In the old days, hats had hat bands that were stiff, and they were meant to make the hat stiff, right? And how did they make the hat band stiff? They dipped the hat band, the fabric, into a liquid mercury, because mercury, when it hardens, is hard, like a metal. It's a heavy metal. And then they put the hat band around the hat. Unfortunately, the people who were hatters, H-A-T-T-E-Rs, as opposed to the haters we've been playing, the hatters very often became insane from having exposed themselves to mercury, methyl mercury, because they dipped their hands in the solution. They didn't use gloves. They didn't know any different then. And the mercury migrated through their skin into their serum, and they wound up with methyl mercury poisoning, one of the symptoms being acting like the mayor of San Francisco, or let's say the former governor of California, or any one of the current federal officials who are appointed by Obama. They would be classic examples of they would be showing classic symptoms of methylmercury poisoning, that they hate a nation that has given them so much. But there are other examples of the Mad Hatter out there. But anyway, the long and short of it is many people who smoke marijuana don't realize that they're uptaking an awful lot of mercury in the marijuana smoke. That's what I was trying to say to you. So they're mad. They're crazy, half crazy from the THC and half crazy from the mercury that they've been getting from the marijuana grown in volcanic soil, because volcanic soil happens to be very rich in mercury. And so when the plant grows in that soil, it takes up the metals in the soil, and it winds up in the marijuana schmuck. And when you smoke it, putz, it winds up in your brain, which is why you can't get a job and you're still living at home and you still hate America, you moron. Throw away the marijuana cigarette. You might have a chance at life, you schmuck, or you're liable to wind up another loser at 50 walking the street hating the world, is what I like to say to you. Unfortunately, I don't know you, but I know you just heard me. Mr. Mercury, cadmium, lead, chromium, nickel, arsenic, selenium, pyridine, quinoline, isoprene, acrylonitrile, benzene, toluene, styrene, formaldehyde, acetaldehyde, acetone, acrolein, propionaldehyde, crotonaldehyde, methyletyl ketone, butyraldehyde, hydroquinone, resorcinol, catechol, phenol, cresol, naphthalene, all aboard, fluorine, pantothene, anthracene, fluoranthetine, pyrene, benzoanthracene, chrysine, benzoafluoranthine, benzoclaforanthine, benzoepyrene, benzoapyrene, pyrolene. My friends, all in that natural marijuana smoke that you think is natural, boys and girls, because your teachers told you it was better and safer than alcohol and better and safer than big tobacco. But in fact, my friends, that's why you're a loser. My friends, that's why you can't get a job. My friends, that's why you're lazy, and that's why you're unmotivated. That's why you hate your mother. That's why you hate your father. And that's why you hate your country. It's all because of the Mad Hatter within. I'll be right back.
Savage.
She's real fine, my 409. She's real fine, my 409, my 409. save my pennies and I save my dimes.
Giddy up, poor old eyes.
For I knew there would be.
And doing the requested abdominal work on him, he became somewhat vocal. With muffled moans, etc., he began demanding that I go lower and massaging on the abdominal area. I was shocked, and I did not massage beyond what is considered a safe non-sexual area of the abdomen. He further insisted in
actually
becoming verbally sharp and loud. I went into much deeper shock as I realized it appeared he was demanding sexual favors or sexual behaviors. I decided to declare I got so freaked I just got... But I got a tiny bit mad under my terror. I decided to clarify things by asking him, as he angrily complained that I was not doing what he wanted, for him to show me exactly what he wanted me to do, such as word and such. I said, well, why don't you show me? Because I thought, this is too nuts. He grabbed my right hand hard, shoved it down under the sheet to his pubic hair area, and said to me, there, in a very sharp, loud, angry-sounding tone.
Now that, she is talking about the man who would save the world from global warming. You know, there's a bit of psychology here. And aside from the salaciousness and the jokes and the comedic nature of it, one could do a reasonable thesis in psychology on a man so obsessed with the concept, the false concept of global warming when there is none, and his own heat, his own body heat, his own mental heat. In other words, this man is in heat all the time. He's horny, in other words, frustrated. And here's a man who's rich and powerful, right, revered by millions, and he can't get any sex. So he goes to some poor masseuse and tries to get, you know, release. And he picks the wrong one. He actually picks a straight one, the one out of 1,000 that's actually in it for the massage, as opposed to the... Listen to the next one in clip 5.
He was moaning, groaning, moving, and acting in a very suggestive way. It was unreal. I never even had any of my hotel clients get angry, yell, or act out at me before. During the massage episode, I realized, much to my horror, that I was in the perfect storm and that I was in a room with someone who was Teflon-coated in terms of his credibility and celebrity status.
All right. So, again, this is amazing how stupid these rich guys, you know, it's amazing to me when you compare this one to a Spitzer, that who would be so stupid as to go to hookers and pay on credit cards, number one. And this was a man who supposedly had the power over Wall Street, to show you how brilliant Spitzer was. He was the governor of New York, had the power over Wall Street. And he's so smart that he used the credit card to buy hookers. That shows you the genius. He didn't even think of using cash, let's say. So he used the credit card and got caught. And he's such a genius that CNN hired him. He's perfect for CNN. Now, the only place left for Al Gore to go would be CNN after this one. Because what's coming next is something that you would hear in Marin County, California, or Austin, Texas, or some of the other denizens of idiocy, when he goes into another tactic to try to get her to touch him in inappropriate areas in clip 6.
He then tried another tactic as though he had very suddenly switched personalities and began in a pleading tone, pleading for release of his second chakra there. There's so much.
Wait, stop it. Now, for those of you who don't know what a second chakra is, we're not talking about S-H-O-C-K-R-A, not chakra. In other words, not chakra. In other words, not his second chakra, meaning you release him and he has a shock and he goes raw. No, not his second chakra, his second chakra, which is a different story. But you have to be an expert on Indian food to understand that. And you have to go into Oriental restaurants and bow and put your hands together to get a napkin and a glass of water in order to understand what a chakra is. So play that one again.
He then tried another tactic as though he had very suddenly switched personalities and began in a pleading tone, pleading for release of his second chakra there. There's so much tension being held. This was yet another euphemism for sexual activity he was requesting, put cleverly as though it were a spiritual request or something. I was further deeply shocked and repulsed as my realization of what was happening sunk in, and especially as my mind was now reeling from this absolute betrayal by someone I had inherently trusted as a good guy who cares about people, including me, because of his public persona.
So she was shocked by his chakra. Let's put it to you that way. The masseuse was shocked by Gore's chakra. That's all. That's the headline. Shocked by his chakra. Accuser calls him a crazed sex poodle. I have to hide this from my poor dog. If he hears any of this, it could pervert him. This is really good stuff. This is great. Actually, we missed the first one because there are men like this that I've seen all my life. They've always given me the creeps, and I'm a man, by the way. The kind of guy that if you're a woman, have you been in social settings with the kind of guy who will hug you and hold you a little too tight and pull you towards him? You know what I'm saying? Like, I know women over the years, there are kind of creepy guys who are always like goofballs who don't really have, you know, luck with women, who when they hug a woman, they either hug them too tightly or they pull them against them too tightly and don't let them go in order to feel their bosoms against their chest, to be very polite about it. Listen to clip two.
I knocked on the door. Al Gore opened the door and I introduced myself saying, "Hello, I'm your massage therapist. How shall I call you?" He answered, "Call me Al," with a big smile as he stretched out his arms to wrap me into an embrace as a greeting in the inner entryway of the room as I stepped inside. He was wearing a long-sleeved dress shirt. It was a medium bright blue, I think, open at the collar, and dark pants, which were slacks, I think. The hug went on a bit long, and I was taken just a bit aback by it. If it weren't Al Gore, I would have seriously been questioning the situation right there, because a hug from an unknown male client before the session is a bit odd and unprofessional by typical LMT business standards.
Did LMT? What's LMT? Does anyone know what LMT means? Ah, licensed massage, only in America, LMT. All right. Finally, we have the story of the exact muscle groups that he wanted worked on, the glutes, the hamstrings, the quads, and the adductors. Listen to clip three.
He described a grueling travel schedule over the previous week or two, mostly by air, and he said he needed his gluteus, hamstring, quadriceps, and adductors worked on, as well as his abdominal area besides his back and whole body. I inquired if this was due to the long flight hours, and he said yes. I mentally noted that a request for adductor work is a bit unusual. In the massage world, sometimes it is said to possibly, but rarely, be that it's a precursor to inappropriate behavior by male clients.
I never even knew where the adductors were. I remember when I was working out as a kid, I started out in the American Health Studios on Jamaica Avenue when I was 16. Pushing, you know, weights. I was a weightlifter as a kid. Yeah, I was a small kid, but I built myself up pretty good after high school. I go every day. I never even knew of the adductors. I didn't know where they were. I heard of the glutes and the lats, of course, the other standard muscles. We all worked on them, but I never heard of the adductors. That had we only known of adductors, we could have tried it on Friday night on our dates. You know what I'm saying? We could have said, "Touch me in my adductor." Where is the adductor? I didn't even. There must be one. It runs down the lower abs or something. The inside of the thigh, that's adductor work. All right, whatever, to each his own, you know, if it floats your boat and all that. I guess Al Gore gets off on having his adductors touched. But what does anyone find this naive in a way? Let's talk about other things. You know, Israel was founded by some pretty mean, tough customers. There's not a nation on earth that was not founded in blood, by the way. I'm sorry to tell you. Many of you live in the Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck world. The truth of the situation is there's not a nation on earth that was not founded in blood, rivers of blood. Not a nation on earth that was founded through peaceful means that I know of. You name it. You show me a nation that was not founded through conquest. I don't know of such a nation. It's an unfortunate reality of the world we live in. And as a trained biologist, all you have to do is get down with the microscope and look in a pond. And wherever you look, you see one organism trying to get over on the other. Look at a plant. Look in your garden. You see a tree trying to block the light of the other tree. If you put it in speed up the time of a tree growing a branch. You put small plants underneath a big plant. The big plant immediately puts out new shoots over the little plants. It doesn't even want it to have sun. It doesn't want it to have sun. It wants to block the sunlight going to the little plant underneath it. And then its roots move out saying, "How dare you take up any of my nutrients and my water. I want your sunlight. I want your water." It's the same with humans. It's the same with human beings. It's struggle. It's strife. Life is mean and hard and short. And this is true whether it's in Oakland, California, New York City, a corporate boardroom, or wherever you may be, life is mean and short and hard. That's what life is. Make no mistake about it. So you could live in a dream world all you want. It's not that way in the real world. Life is exactly what it is, no more and no less. And life is indifferent to you, by the way. It's only when you connect with God, and I don't want to get into the religion now, that you might have a shot at getting through it without going totally insane or killing somebody.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Oil spill is gushing. Where are we turning the U.S. seafood suppliers? To Asia, to make sure that you have enough shrimp for their gumbos. And by the way, since Kagan is from the Upper West Side, where I would say shrimp is probably more popular than the Bill of Rights, I would say that the people on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, the libs, spend more time and more passion talking about shrimp than they do about the First Amendment, for example. I think it's worth talking about shrimp. Price of plump black tiger shrimp is at a 10-year high in Vietnam, selling for about $6.14 a pound, said Bill Dung. I mean, I don't want to make mockery of the name, but that pretty much says it all. Bui Dung? You know, do you know how shrimp are raised in Asia? They're raised, they're called sewer shrimp amongst people who know the difference. They swim in sewage. Seafood from Asia is toxic poison. They don't have proper sanitation. I told you earlier that the waters in China in particular are polluted with heavy metals. You think it's any different in Vietnam or in Thailand or in Bangladesh? I mean, I know that the Beatles sang for benefit for Bangladesh 30 years ago, but have you ever seen Bangladesh? I wouldn't eat food from there anymore. So what, are you going to die if you don't have a shrimp? You know, this is one of the things that the kosher food laws, by the way, and I'm not religious or anything, they ban shellfish. They were smart. They banned shellfish for the same reasons that we see today. It wasn't that they didn't like a shrimp. It wasn't that the old olive growers from the Old Testament didn't like a shrimp. They probably knew that they were bottom feeders and they were dirty. So they said, don't eat crustaceans because they live on the bottom and you'll get sick from them. They knew this in biblical times. So an Orthodox Jew or a Muslim doesn't eat a shrimp. I don't know if the Muslims don't eat shrimp. I see them in plenty of the seafood restaurants knocking it down pretty good. I don't really know. I don't understand that part of it. Can a Muslim help me with that? I never see an Orthodox Jew who's religious in a restaurant I go to because they're kosher. But Muslims, they come in with the headscarves and they press down, knocking down the food left and right. I don't know. What's their restriction other than pork? They can eat a shrimp? The Quran lets you have a shrimp but not a pig? I don't understand how that works. So someone can enlighten me on that one. So we got the Asian shrimpers' doors are being pounded upon right now. There's a frenzy. Because Elena Kagan and her friends, they must have shrimp for the barbecue this summer. It's the number one most consumed seafood in America. People eat more shrimp than they do canned tuna. Did you know that? How much shrimp do you think the average American eats? 4 pounds a year. Americans have an insatiable craving for shrimp, eating about 4 lubs a year. And while wild Gulf shrimp provides only about 7-9% of that supply. The oil spill will likely send U.S. restaurants and supermarkets into a short-term frenzy, said Fatima Dung. Oh, no, Fatima Ferdhaus at a company. Larger shrimp are in short supply. Why am I talking about shrimp? Because it's much better than to talk about Scott Brown, Lindsey Graham, and the other Republican stooges. Let's go to the people of the Savage Nation and take your calls. Ann in Portland, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm wondering what your response is to the thought of eternity frightens me. And
well, I understand it frightens everybody, but look, I'm going to give you a comedic answer because it may actually help you and millions of others. You ready for this?
Okay.
When I was a little boy, I would ask my mother, God rest her soul, about death. You know, children ask those questions, and she would smile and chuckle and say, she says, I don't know what it is. She says, all I know is no one's ever come back to complain.
Okay.
And you know what? It's simple, but it worked for me. It still does. What are you going to do about what's eternal? The eternal question of the abyss, right, is what you're asking?
It's not the so much where, it's that. When I phoned up, you had triggered a thought that I try to shut down whenever it comes up. When I die, it's hard for me to envision not ever thinking again. You know, the body dies, but because I think, it's hard to think.
Yeah,
that someday,
I think therefore I am. So what you're saying is if I cease thinking, I am no longer, right?
And if I go to the other alternative, okay, no matter where I spend it, somewhere it goes on forever and ever and ever. If I think on that, I don't want to be infinity.
But isn't it wonderful to realize that this is a miracle, that you're alive, that I'm alive, that the people listening to the show are alive? Isn't it a wonder to pause and think about what a miracle it really is, what life really is, and what a miraculous event life is?
Yeah.
It's a miracle. So therefore, if life is a miracle, and if you believe in a grand creator who created it all, so therefore, death is part of this grand enterprise called life, is it not?
Yeah.
And it's set up so that we don't know what it is. And there's a reason that mere mortals don't know what it is. So, because the grand creator doesn't want mere mortals to know what the next world is. He only wants to hint at it. He doesn't want us to know what eternity is. And so therefore, it's the way it's set up. It's to keep us humble. It's to keep us as humans. Otherwise, we become totally megalomaniacal, thinking that we're gods. We're not gods. We're only men. It's just something we can't know. We almost have to suspend any desire to know. See, that's the point. You say, I can't resolve that. Do you remember IQ tests when you were young and your teacher told you if you hit a question you can't answer, don't get hung up on it, keep going? You remember that? This is one of those questions, Ann. You can't answer it, skip it, and go on to the next question on the intelligence test called living. That's all. Move on. You're never going to resolve it. It's broken. People have broken their minds over this from the beginning of time. You look into the dog you love or the cat you love. You realize it's going to die one day. What are you going to do? You can't stop it. Same with you or a child. I mean, it's a horrible thought. I told you before, when I was a little boy in Queens, New York, there was a doctor's wife who went crazy with this question. She was a mad woman. It was sad, and we knew she was crazy. She would stop even the kids. She'd stop the mailman, everybody, and look at them and hold on to their clothing. You had to, like, pull her hands off you. And she'd be crying, saying, why did God make us that we have to die? Why did God make us that we're born to die? And kids didn't know what to do with her. The poor doctor didn't know what to do with her, but he didn't ridicule her. He stayed married to her the rest of their lives. Not like today, they throw out a wife like a used handkerchief because she said something wrong. It was the way it is. Some people crack up from the whole question. Others become talk show hosts. You see, there's many different ways to resolve this. You can paint, you can sculpt, you can run, you can bicycle, you can become a degenerate sex maniac, you can become a drug addict. I mean, these are all manifestations of people who cannot answer that question. Don't you understand that? These are people trying to answer the question in their own way, and that's called the human condition. That's the great tapestry that keeps God entertained. Tucson, Arizona. Karen, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to tell you, you sound great today. Cheered me up.
Isn't that funny? Like, some people live through my moods. The reason I found good is I sound good as I went to the dentist and I'm on pain pills.
Oh, well, there's something to be said for that.
That's one of the things. Like, I hate going to the dentist, but on the other hand, I look forward to it because I know afterwards I'll feel good for a few hours.
Peroxide is always a good choice.
Isn't it horrible? Why do you feel bad today? What's wrong with you?
I don't feel bad, but I want to tell you that I feel much better hearing you. Sound
but
good.
You mean you lived? You lived through me, or...
The truth is, last week you told someone he was a lousy bum. He probably didn't work if he had time to sit around and listen to you.
So you got a kick out of that one, huh?
Well, so I was a little embarrassed to call, but I do listen to you. Some days I worry about you. That's the truth.
No, a lot of women do. They have a maternal instinct towards me. At least I know I'm loved. No, I got stopped in the street about a year ago by some Filipino women who were driving by. They're big fans of the show. They stopped me in Chinatown, and she yelled out of the car, "Michael, I was so glad to hear you felt good today." I was amazed. I was just amazed. It's amazing what a family a radio show can be like, you know? A radio program can produce sort of an extended family for people.
That's exactly what I feel like.
Maybe it's a reflection in a way. I mean, not to get too philosophical about the loss of family in America. There's no closeness anymore. And so, you know, people live through a media personality, so to speak.
Savage.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind which one you are.
So yesterday... this talk show host went out on his little boat, his 22-foot boat. I have a little boat and a big boat. Sometimes I don't use the big boat because it's too much trouble. Anyway, I use the little boat because it's easy. You know, something small is beautiful. In most things, not all. But in some things, small is beautiful, and particularly in a boat. So it's 22 feet long with a little like cabin on it. It's a sort of mini tug. It's a fake tugboat. It has a 3-cylinder Yamaha engine, 29 horsepower. It sips fuel by the pint. It seats 8 people on the back with cushions. It looks like a little runabout. It's extremely seaworthy. So I, Mrs. S., and the 2 poodles get in the boat, and we head over about, I don't know, maybe 50 minutes away. There's a place with a dock. I'm not going to say where. Now, normally on a weekend, it's jammed. Jammed. You can't get on a dock. There's only room for like 6, 8, 10 boats, and it's usually full, as it was yesterday. So luckily... I'm a very good boater, and I found an end. It's a narrow dock, right? And it's all full on both sides, boat dock. But there's a little piece of the dock that's 2-3 feet wide by the post that has cleats. So I put it on the side, and I was able to dock it and tie it up. And one of us goes and gets the food. The dogs are on the boat, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, there's a fat slob in a sailboat who's bothering me. He wants to edge me out of there by making me uncomfortable, by nosing his boat near me. This goes on for 30 minutes now, and I don't say anything. He's nosing up. His engine is running. His schmuck son is blowing his cigarette smoke at me, and I see it's going to be trouble. Now, in my earlier days, I would have stood up and said something to him, but I knew right away it would have turned bad. But since I have learned to temper my temper, I figured, what am I going to gain by getting into a screaming fight with this fat pig right now? I'll just bide my time, and I'm going to turn my back on him, and I'm not going to respond. Meanwhile, the schmuck's hovering and motoring an engine and moving and constantly, in other words, like nosing at me and menacing me. Lo and behold, about 30 minutes of this goes by, and the missus returns with the food because you can't bring dogs in this joint. The dogs are too high class compared to the average person that sits there getting stoned and drunk on the deck. So she brings the food over. As she brings the food over, the guy next to me is going to pull out of the dock. So I said, great, I'll tell you what. I'll move in, you'll move out there, right? And we'll rope it around. It was very friendly. And meanwhile, Mr. Fat Schmuck with the sailboat, he thinks he's going to slip into the guy who's pulling out while I'm waiting. So I say, hey, I'm going in there. You're going to go over there. And he says, no, I'm going in there. The minute I said that, an Italian guy shows up with like a cutoff. His name, I'm not going to say his name, with a gold cross. And he comes over. He says, hey, can I help you? He comes over to help me. He didn't know me now, remember, at that point. He just was a nice guy whose boat was nearby. Hey, let me help you move the boat around. I said, well, I don't know who you are, but I'm glad you showed up because there's going to be a little trouble here in a minute with that fat slob there who's going to try and edge me out. He says, Michael, don't you remember me? Anyway, I had an interchange. This guy knew this guy from somewhere before a few years ago. one of my biggest fans. He's from Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, but he lives out here. And he says to me, you want me to throw him in the water? He says, hey, guys. And all of a sudden, four more Italian guys come off the dock, heavily muscled guys with cutoffs and crosses. I mean, this is an anomaly in polite, backstabbing Marin County filled with the worst of types of humans who smile at you and put a knife in your back. You know the type of nice white guy that I'm talking about. Big smile in front and a knife in the back. Oh, wonderful people. Never an honest word comes out of their lips. But these guys are straight-up Brooklyn guys, and he starts in, hey, guys, you know who's here? This is Michael Savage. He has a big radio show, so everyone's looking. He's glowering at the guy in the sailboat. The guy in the sailboat still don't get it, that he's a minute away from losing his boat and his head. And I said, no, calm down. You don't have to do anything. And the guys, well, my mother's here from New York, and my father's here from New York, and my father-in-law, we're all Sicilians, and he used to listen to you till he died. He said, you're the only person in America who says anything like it is. It was one of those great moments that is very hard for me to translate. I'm trying to give it to you like in a verbal way, but it's a human thing that you can't really describe. You have to have lived through it. Now, I'm not a guy who meets people off the air. I go out of my way to be very anonymous, and I don't talk. If I raise my voice, people know me, or if I say, Teddy, people will stop and say, is that Teddy, and are you Michael? I say, that's Teddy, but I don't know who Michael is. But in this case, I said yes, and we had a wonderful time. The long and short of it is all the boats got moved properly. The fat slob moved the sailboat quietly and meekly into the second tier. And I said, hey, guys, this is so beautiful. Bring your parents down off the... He says, Mike, I got to tell you about my mother. She's in from New York for a week. I told her we're coming across the bay in my boat to go for lunch at a certain place. She made me a meatball sandwich to bring to a restaurant because she don't like the food out here. I said, that is so beautiful. I said, I want to meet your mother. She made him a meatball hero to bring with him. I mean, the guy's a man. He's not a child. But the mother made him a meatball hero to bring to a restaurant because she knew the food would be garbage, you know. So it was that kind of thing. So we're sitting there, and he brings mom. I loved her. Brings mom over. I actually sang her a song when she showed up because my mother passed a long time ago. And I love real people more than anything on earth. When you live in a land of the phony, a real person is one of the greatest bombs that you can have. BALMS. Okay. So I have mom and dad. I said, you get on my boat. Get him on the boat. He said, oh, Mike, it'll be like you're from the Bronx. We're from Brooklyn. He says, this will be like the stoop. He said, we'll pull chairs out and we'll talk. And meanwhile, he commandeered, he took over the whole dock. Everybody, he was telling what to do and this and that, but in a nice way. So I had him on the boat. We had a couple of beers. We exchanged emails, you know, and it was that. And here I wake up to a world without shrimp. So here we are. I'm glad that I have a forum and I have a microphone and I can, you know, tell you like it is the way I see it.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I've lived in a land of the empty phony for so long. I got used to it. I mean, that's how I created the Savage Nation. I really never told you that. In other words, what motivates a man to create a virtual world on a radio show called The Savage Nation? What motivates a man to do this? And where do I get the energy to do it? It comes from living in a vacuum. It comes from living in a void of phonies. Such severe, backstabbing, fraudulent, liberal white people that you've never seen anything like the people here. Smile to your face and stab you in the back day in and day out. Empty souls, every last one of them. So when this thing happens on a dock, I've had a run-in on that dock a year or two, but I never went back because of it. The nasty people, they see an older guy and his wife, and they figure you're vulnerable. They don't know how violent my temper can be. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not Mr. Tough Guy, but you know what? Any man, when he has to stand his ground, will stand his ground. I don't care who he is. So anyway, I try to avoid incidents like this. I didn't go back, but I wanted to go back because I enjoy going up there with the getting the food with the dogs to kick. And this guy to show up out of nowhere... But I mean at a central casting. I don't just mean an acculturated Brooklyn Italian guy who's in Marin County, California, San Francisco. I'm talking about still the street tongue and really loud and really heavy duty and incredible. I tried to buy a car from a couple of years ago in a car dealer. That's where we had originally met. He reminded me. I didn't know. But his parents are such wonderful people. You know, I can't explain it. When you meet people, all social barriers drop. It doesn't mean anything. You know, remember, I have written 5 best-selling books on the New York Times bestseller list. Don't you ever forget that. You can underestimate me all you want, but believe me, millions of people don't. Just remember who you're talking to. So I don't play the highbrow number with people, although I believe me, I can do it. I just don't do it. I'd rather not. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I'd rather be alone with a takeout on the boat with the, you know. So that's the story. I mean, you know, it was a lot of fun for me to contact real people who willing. I mean, the guy was willing to stand up and get into a brawl for me. I didn't want him to do it. But yeah, I got to tell you one little side note about the slob on the sailboat. This guy was about 65 years old, white hair, a gut on him, the kind of ugly fat slob with the gut hanging over the. I don't know how he even had a sailboat. The guy looks like he should drive a Lexus in Los Angeles. And he had an old sailboat. What was it worth? $10,000. You know, a piece of junk, about 32 feet long. But anyway, the point is, after this whole incident, another boat pulls up. And this slob walks down the dock and says to the guy, do this or do that, I can help you. And the guy's wife says to him, he knew what he was doing before you showed up. In other words, shut your mouth and get away. We don't need you. He was a troublemaker. He was looking for trouble. That type. And, you know, I felt it was a godsend. I did something good for the first time in years. I felt God rewarded me immediately in a little way. I think God watches us. I really do. I know sometimes I go in and out of this thing. I know it sounds very childish to tell you this. It's little stuff. And he says, if something went bad, God didn't like you. Yeah, God shouldn't like me. I'm no good. I'm no good like the rest of you. We're all no good. We're all born bad and we get worse. That's my view of life. We're born no good and we get worse. Unless we're raised by good people who keep us in line. We're like little animals. Children are no good. I mean, we don't want to believe that, but children are basically not good. Unless they're shaped, they turn into what you have in America today. New York City, WOR. Pete, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, it's Peter. I was so moved by your story. I'm an Italian that grew up in Bensonhurst. I'm a little more educated probably than Vinny, but I had tremendous respect for the Vinnies. I have cousins that were like Vinnies. They're called stand-up guys, and they have a lot of heart.
Oh, the best. I swear to God. Now, remember, he came over just to help. He didn't know what was going on. But the minute he saw the fat slob, it was causing me trouble. And I said, you know, that guy's causing a little trouble here, guy. And don't get involved because it's going to get nasty. You want me to throw him in the water? And basically, 2 minutes later, all his friends came off the dock. One big guy after another. It was so beautiful. See, Pete, I was outnumbered. Do you understand? I was outnumbered by the slob and his son on the boat. He figured I was an easy target to push around. All of a sudden, it looked like I had a posse on the dock, and they were hanging around with me. The guy shrank. You know what I mean?
Like, you know, we call those guys Bensonhurst fat slobs. You got that
on. Yeah, we know how to call a fat slob a fat slob. New York, WR, Andy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind? Andy, go ahead, please.
Jeez, Mike, let me tell you, you got to be from Brooklyn, I think, to really appreciate that. I got a 100 times I've been on both sides of that story. And you come away from an experience like that just feeling like God came in and...
I swear to you, that's what I felt. Because how did this timing occur? I'm talking within the right second, not even the right minute.
It was like a movie. It's like on cue, the guy, old Vinny, came in just when you needed him. His boys were there, and nobody was messing with Michael because he was there to look out.
Exactly. And the guy on the boat figured that they were all together, and they were just, you know, waiting for the opportunity to come down and help me. It was amazing, Andy, because I'm a loner. I mean, I usually take care of my own problems. I don't get into trouble because I don't cause any. But sometimes trouble will find you, so you have a choice. You could shrink and walk away from it, which I do 99% of the time, incidentally. Or sometimes you have to stand up and be counted. And I had to stand up at this because this was getting uglier by the second with the guy menacing me with his boat, wouldn't shut the engine off, kept nosing again near my boat within a foot when he knew I was trying to sit down and eat. You know what I'm talking about. Just to make me uncomfortable so I would leave and he could take the spot. You know the type.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, Mike, you know, you inspired me. I've been listening to you for quite a while now. And we just... policy. Yep. And we're tackling that issue of Zero Mosque, and we think it's disgraceful.
Oh, the Ground Zero Mosque. Yeah, go to the genius there. What's his name? Bloomberg. He never met a dollar he didn't like. You know, on the way to the studio, I got to tell you this before we go back to the politics at hand. I walk around San Francisco. I love to walk around the streets. It revitalizes me. In fact, everywhere on earth that I go, I don't care if it's the most beautiful beach or a mountain, I still like a city better. I guess it's born and bred into me. I'm a city boy in many ways. As much as I love the water, and I do, I still crave walking around and looking at people and observing human nature. So before the show, I had lunch in my greasy Chinese restaurant. I got the chicken curry all over my shirt. I tried not to, but it's a drop always sneaks over the napkin. I don't know how. It's like a miracle. I could put rubber around it. A drop of the gravy will get on the shirt. Then I go for a walk, and I go down to Justin Herman Plaza, which is near the Ferry Building in this beautiful city. And normally there's one event or another. Usually nobody, people sitting around having lunch. It's a very beautiful open plaza. And if there's any event there at all, it's a left-wing stupidity event. Some stupid left-wing idiocy. Pushing some global idiocy of some kind or another. You know, do I have to reiterate what it might be? And today I hear singing. I couldn't make out what they were singing. They were wearing green undershirts. Young people were singing hymns. I thought it was hymns. Then I said, don't even get your hopes up. Yeah, I thought it was some green group. I didn't know what singing environment is good and do this. I'll go. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what to expect. So I walk closer and then I hear Lord and Jesus is the Lord. And I said, oh, my God. Christians singing in San Francisco, not being stoned by the vermin? I said, yeah, these are Christians. Christians singing in San Francisco about Jesus in San Francisco and not being thrown to the lions? And I saw people listening, and they were like coming from everywhere. They were being drawn to it. They're thirsting for it. The people in this city are thirsting. Thirsting for some truth and some beauty. They have nothing but pollution and insanity everywhere they turn. Pollution and insanity everywhere you turn. The media is worthless. The politicians are worthless. They don't know where to turn. So you see them coming into the plaza and these children are singing hymns to God. So I went up to one of the people. She says, yes, we're a group from Louisiana. We're from Shreveport, the nicest people on earth. And they were singing and I said, you haven't been sneered at? She said, no, not once. I said, well, who pays your way? Well, she said, each of the children pay their own way. I just shook their hands and said, God bless you, and walked away. But the point I'm making is the only hope for this world, in my opinion, the absolute only hope for this world is would be the teachings of peace from all religions.
Savage.
All the white girls strutting around with eyeglasses and dogs. That's the future of America. Mother had 2-3 children. The daughter's walking around with a dog, like a handbag. The death of the West, Spengler was so ahead of his time. Otto Spengler, the death of the West. He predicted that the Asiatic peoples would rise and that the others would fall. He saw it in 1910, 1912. So, you know, it's part of history. We're all going to you-know-where in a handbasket. You may as well enjoy it. Here, let me give you an example of one of the reasons we're dying as a people. It's called lawyers. Tort lawyers who put Obama in power. They're one of the special interest groups that put this character in power. Are the people who sue everybody for nothing. So here's a story. Wheelchair-bound man sues Bronx Zoo over access. A wheelchair-bound victim says trying to get around the Bronx Zoo is just beastly. Modesto Hernandez filed suit against the Bronx Zoo, claiming that excessive slopes and lack of proper handrails keep him from making his way around the animal exhibits. Can't use water fountains and bathrooms. The lawsuit, which charges violations of the Disgusting Americans with Disabilities Act and the state's human rights law, seeks unspecified damages and an order mandating alterations so the zoo is, quote, accessible and usable by individuals with disabilities. Now, you know it's going to break the Bronx Zoo. I just came from a hole-in-the-wall Japanese restaurant that I eat in once in a while, a little hole-in-the-wall near where I live. Nice guy, Tokyo guy. Always jokes around with me, you know. So he says to me, Mike, is there anything you can do for me? He said, there's a guy who goes around suing little restaurants for disability stuff. I said, a gangster? What's his name? And he showed me the guy's name. He speaks broken English, but he had the man's name written down, which I'm not going to repeat right now. He said he broke a few small restaurants up in San Rafael, and now he's after me. He said he's suing me for $40,000, $60,000. I don't know what the number is. He said it's going to bankrupt me. I mean, it's a small guy with a little, you know, hole in the wall. He said, it's just killing me. I said, well, there's very little you can do. I said, I know an owner of a Chinese restaurant was broken by this. I said, there's a criminal class of lawyer, and there's a criminal class of people in wheelchairs that make a living off of this. And he said to me something along the lines of, well, I didn't want to go into what he said. Wheelchair-bound man sues Bronx Zoo over access. So the vermin with law degrees who pursue these lawsuits are one of the main reasons America's dying, period. Now, what's coming next? Are we going to see lawsuits from the blind because they can't be airline pilots? Or lawsuits from the blind because they can't see the Grand Canyon? And they want the Grand Canyon to have Braille put on it? What is going to be next? Do you understand how insane this is? I mean, the guy has a right to see the place, but he has no right to sue just because he's got a disability and a physical problem. Is he going to now sue the people of the United States of America because there is no elevator inside the Statue of Liberty? Are the blind going to sue the National Park System because they can't see the Grand Tetons? It's unbelievable to me. A person has limitations. It's sad. So what is it? Everyone else should bend their hands and knees over that? Everyone should get on their hands and knees because Mr. Hernandez can't see the Bronx Zoo? I'd like to see his lawyer's name. I'd find his home address for you. I'd like to see the lawyer's name for this lawsuit. I'll give you his home address and where his daughter goes to school. It's the lawyers. I don't blame Mr. Hernandez. I blame the lawyers. The vermin who come out of these mills with law degrees.
Ding-a-ding-ding-dong-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Boom-ba-da. Ba-do-ba-do-ba-day. Whoa, I feel real. If I can take you up in paradise up above.
So, what can I tell you? The reason he gets away with it is because the presidents can't break. They cannot break the American Trial Lawyers Association, which is a criminal organization, in my opinion. And certainly we need attorneys. Everybody needs attorneys to do business in this country. But cases like this show you why lawyers are hated so. And it shows you why we have Obama as president. New York schools may trim hot lunch options. Remember when they laughed at Reagan because he counted ketchup as a vegetable? Remember that? I guess under a proposal by Mayor Bloomberg, they're going to count a cardboard gefilte fish as a fish portion or something like that. New York schools may trim hot lunch option. Oh, that's terrible. That's a bad joke. No, he could put a cardboard piece of fish on the plate, couldn't he? In the virtual world, wouldn't that count as fish, as a fish portion? It wouldn't matter. The kids wouldn't eat it if it was real anyway. New York City school children may see fewer choices at the lunch line next fall. Poor babies. They need three meals a day. When I went to school, there were kids who didn't eat all day long. They did just fine. The mother didn't give them a hot meal. They ate nothing. They were skinny and tough. They could beat the hell out of you. The ones who ate, you could push them around like a blimp. The ones who ate a full breakfast, a full lunch, and a full dinner, you could push them over. The kids who were the meanest were the ones who they denied lunch. The mother was usually a rummy somewhere. The father was a super in the bottom of the building shoveling ashes. And they didn't feed the kids. They had a rummage. They were usually lean. They were the kids today who would be like in the military, like in the Marines right away. They get like tattoos on their neck. No. The schools serve cold sandwiches. You ever eat a cold sandwich in a school cafeteria? To this day, I get a headache thinking of the tomato soup smell in the school cafeteria. Nobody I knew would have eaten the hot food that they served in the cafeteria. The matrons who served the food could have been extras in an Auschwitz movie. They scared the hell out of you. No, I don't mean to make light of it, but did you ever see those women who took those jobs? Brewer said that for many kids, school lunch may be their only hot meal of the day. And if they had more choices, they're more likely to eat it. Wait a minute, let me figure this out. We have an obesity epidemic, but they're stooping food down children's throats. Horrible food like government cheese and government chicken soup because they can't get rid of the tomatoes and the dairy. Under a proposal by Bloomberg, schools that offer 3 hot lunch options would offer just 2. You hear, well, oh, poor babies. And schools that offer 2 hot lunch options would offer none. Oh, would offer 1. So they're still going to get 1 hot lunch option. Oh, poor babies. I can guarantee you the prisoners at Guantanamo get more of a choice than the kids do in school, though, by the way. They get 3 halal meals per day. Probably 3 choices per meal per day. You know, with the new prayer books, they can read how to kill the infidel. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, the part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as if a manor of thy friends or of thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. For whom the bell tolls. Never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. Now, Hemingway wrote a great book called For Whom the Bell Tolls. Many of you have heard the phrase, no man is an island, and many of you have read Hemingway or heard of the book For Whom the Bell Tolls. But what you don't know is that this came from John Donne, who wrote in the 1600s, one of those hated white males who gave Western civilization everything. That's right, John Donne, Meditation 17, Devotions Upon Emergent Occasions in the 1600s. Thus far, I've not seen anything as good come from, let us say, the rap artists, for example. I doubt very much that in 500 years you'll still be listening to rap songs. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. Now, I've just made an interesting statement. I am saying that I am concerned with humanity. I'm concerned about the next man's health and the next man's welfare. That's correct. But I'm not concerned with the next man's welfare if he is a no-goodnik, if he is a bum, if he is an illegal alien. It's not my concern. If a person snuck into my country to steal benefits, I'm supposed to worry about his health and his welfare? Are you crazy?
Savage.